Samin Ali is an award-winning author. She wrote a debut novel, Madras on Rainy Days, in 2004, that was the winner of France's prestigious Prix du Premier Roman Étranger Award. She is the first Indian Muslim woman fiction writer to be published in America. Samina is also an activist, a cultural commentator, and the curator of the International Museum of Women's current exhibition, Muslima, Muslim Women's Art and Voices. She is the co-founder of American Muslim feminist organization, Daughters of Hajar, a blogger for The Huffington Post and The Daily Beast, and a popular speaker.
Which means you strike a woman, you strike a rock. And that's what I grew up with.
Nothing can stop me in this mission, in this campaign of education.
You're listening to Gender Talks. How are you feeling today?
I'm doing great. I mean, we're taking it day by day. As you know, here in California, we have a shelter in place order that's happening right now, so day by day.
Well, in this podcast, we're talking about Muslim women. You're Muslim.
Yes.
Gave a TEDx talk in 2017 about what the Quran really says about hijab. But first of all, what is it like to be a Muslim woman nowadays?
Well, it's a complicated question, and it's a good question. It is.
Well, thank you.
I think that what has happened since 9/11 in these past 20 years or so is that Muslims have been increasingly discriminated against, both in the US and many parts of Europe. And it's largely because of fear. People have started to believe that all Muslims are terrorists. And, you know, on some level, because there has been so many terrorist acts around the world, I can see where that fear comes from. So I completely understand that. But on the other hand, what's happened is that Muslim women in particular have been targeted because they wear their faith through, if they are covered, which some Muslim women are, then they become targets. And so there's, for Muslim women, I think just as women in general, I think all women end up really bearing the burden of what's happening in society. For instance, in the US right now, there is a huge battle that's happening over reproductive rights. And I think it's always the woman's body, unfortunately, that becomes the battlefield for many, many of the issues that society is facing. So that's the same as what it means to be a Muslim woman.
Well, thank you so much for your answer. You talk about three stereotypes applied to Muslim women: the veils, the oppression, and the equality. How do we fight this stereotype without further increasing segregation?
Again, another complicated question. Really good questions. It's been a very difficult battle because for a long time, what has happened is that whenever I meet people and I ask them, what's the first image that comes to your mind when you think about a Muslim woman? The three images that I always get back, people say, well, when I think of a Muslim woman, the first thing comes to my mind is that she is veiled, or that she is oppressed, or that she's Arab. And none of these are really true, especially, you know, not all women, Muslim women, veil. I don't even veil, and no one in my family has ever veiled. And I come from India, and it's just not part of our heritage. It's not what we do. Veiling is really something that comes out of the Middle East. People think that all Muslim women are Arab, and that's not true, because the largest population of Muslim women actually is in Indonesia, followed by India. Arab Muslims are, you know, they're not the largest population of Muslims. And certainly if anyone meets me or sees my work or encounters me, they'll see that certainly not all Muslim women are oppressed. I'm out there, I'm speaking, and I'm actively engaged in doing my part in helping to overcome these stereotypes. And I'm anything but oppressed. So that's I like to use myself as an example because whenever people meet me for the first time, all three of those stereotypes are blown away because I'm not Arab, I don't know, and I'm certainly not oppressed.
Well, you've been doing a great job.
Thank you.
Along the way, you have gained followers, but there are also people who do not agree with what you defend and try to disarm you. From the research I made, I noticed that the criticism are based on the fact that you're not a scholar and that you do your own interpretation. Whoever says it argues that Muslim women always wore a headscarf, that before the arrival of the Prophet Muhammad, the Arabs used to bury their daughters alive, and that the Al-Quran specifically says, tell your woman, your daughters, that they all cover them all with the jilbab. The question they do is simple. Why should we believe you when everyone, including the holy book, tells us the opposite? But now I ask you, is that really what the Quran tells us about the jilbab?
No, and that's exactly why I gave my TED Talk. And that's exactly why the TED Talk has over 6 million views. Because so many people, and I receive emails from, and I receive, you know, people contact me literally every single day and thank me for saying what I did in that TED Talk. Because it's a lot of what you hear.
It was an act of bravery.
Thank you. Yes, and that's what these women say. They say, thank you for finally saying the truth. Thank you for finally speaking up. Because what's happening, unfortunately, is that there is this sense in that many have that if you are a Muslim woman, then you are somehow lesser than a Muslim man. For instance, you, a Muslim woman and a Muslim man, are equal spiritually. However, they believe that because men are biologically different from women, that biologically men are better than women or stronger than women. And this is simply not the case. This is simply the way that men have interpreted different verses of the Quran in order to make women into second-class citizens.
Why do they do that?
Well, it's misogyny. If you feel like you have to, if you make it seem as though women need to be protected, because the way these interpretations are, women are they need to be protected. So that means, so you see a lot of the laws, for instance, in Saudi. If a woman needs to be protected, then she can't leave her home without a male guardian. If a woman needs to be protected, then she can't get an education. She shouldn't be going to school to get an education because she could be harmed. If a woman needs to be protected, then she can't really be driving a car. So that protectionist approach has what's kept women back. But I have to say, and I'm really happy to say, that one of the crucial issues facing with Muslims today is gender equality. And if you look at the Quran, you will see that justice is central to the philosophy of law in Islam. And now many, many Muslim theorists, and especially women like me, and women theorists, are going out and they're saying, no, we really need to reinterpret what's happened, and we need to reinterpret through an egalitarian approach. And what that means is we need to look at all of the laws that are in place, and we need to question them, and we need to start saying, okay, let's reinsert feminism, let's reinsert the woman in this, and let's try to bring that justice that's central to Islam and apply it to both men and women so that we can have equality that's equal to both men and women, so that women aren't only spiritually equal to men. Instead, women are both spiritually equal to men and equal to men in every other facet of life. I think the main problem that happens is just because we say men and women are biologically different, we assume, and I not just in Muslim culture, I think this is true for every culture, we've just simply assumed that, oh, men and women are biologically different, and that difference means that men are better. Well, why? Why have we assumed that for so long? Because we've been trained to think that, you know? And so it's really about a process of unlearning. And I think that's where, why you get the criticism. A lot of that criticism against me comes from men who are trying to protect and make sure that they don't lose their power.
Well, it leads me to the last question. That is, what is your goal in life, Samina?
You know, my goal in life is simply to get my message out there. And I do that through the arts, you know, whether it's curating the global exhibition that I curated, that's
which
online.
Which is beautiful.
Thank you.
I've seen it. It's beautiful.
Yes, it's on. And I love that because it's online, which means it will live indefinitely online. Anyone can access it. Someone from, you know, where you're living right now in Porto, you can see it, to a woman in a village in India, to me in
yes,
Silicon
it's true.
Valley. Anyone has access to it.
It's really
the first. Yeah, it's the first. What I did with that is I visually showed what I'm always speaking about. So I'm always speaking about the diversity that exists within the Muslim communities. Women don't always look the same. Women don't have the same passions. Women are different. They're all different. They're all individuals. And what makes art so special is when I show that through the exhibition, people see it for themselves. You know, you can go to a lecture and I can lecture at you and you can disagree with me and you can leave that lecture not believing a word that I said. But when we go to a movie or when we go to a museum and see an exhibition or when we read a book, we do so with our guard down. We want to be moved. We want to have a transformation. We want to leave with a message. So when we go in there and we're open to receiving, then we go away going, wow, that really changed my mind about this. That really helped me to see things differently. And that's why I do a lot of my work through my novel. I'm currently writing my second book. I do it through art because
you've heard it in your first. She's writing another novel.
Yes, I am. That's what my project is right now. And hopefully I'll just continue my message through it.
I'm sure you will. To end this episode, I leave everyone who is listening with the curiosity, which is the word Muslim is inclusive. And I consider myself as a Muslima. Do you want to explain why?
Oh, I love that. Yes. It's the Quran, when you read the Quran, which is the holy book for Muslims, it says that Christians, Jews, and Muslims are all people of the book. It's inclusive. It never says only Muslims are, you know, following the right faith. In fact, the Quran never even calls what we call today as Muslims, the Quran never uses that to refer to Muslims as we do today, that with the capital M. So instead, the Quran calls everyone believers. You're a believer. If you believe in one God, you're a believer. And that's Muslim with a lowercase m, Muslim. So it's just a word. It's just a noun. And basically anyone who believes in God is a Muslim. And that's why you're a Muslim.
Well, Samina, thank you so much for being here today with me. I really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so exciting for me to know that my voice is going out there to, you know, everyone who lives there.
Well, thank you again. And I'm really excited to read the next book of yours. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.